Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of two, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Five,
four,
three,
two,
one.
But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS.
Yes, hi.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett. Let me set your scene for you, as I do each and every week. Before I do that, many thanks to Scott McFarland for being an outstanding, altogether too outstanding, guest host for the show last week when we talked about my new book, The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. Many thanks to Scott McFarland. So we're at Café du Parc. We've been here before. It's part of the Willard Hotel right near the White House. And we're going to talk about something familiar to every single one of you watching or listening. What is that topic? The weather. And we're going to talk about it in what I hope is the most informational and scientific sense imaginable. And not a political sense. I do not want to engage, nor am I going to engage this audience in any kind of political tussle about the weather. It's going to be a scientific and knowledge-based conversation about the weather. And who's going to have that with? I'm not doing that by myself, folks. I'm not qualified. But our guest is Dr. Richard Spinrad. He is the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Dr. Spinrad, it's great to have you with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Major. It's my pleasure.
So let's talk about Hurricane Ian. Let's just start there. It's the biggest weather story. It's the biggest national story related to the weather in our most recent history. I am recording this on October 6th. These numbers may change, ladies and gentlemen, but more than 100 people confirmed dead as a result of the storm and subsequent flooding, storm surge, and the like. As of my conversation with you right now, again, October 6th, 400,000 or more Floridians without power. Tremendous property damage in the billions. Quite clearly, we have no idea what that's going to be. What did Hurricane Ian teach us? What is our takeaway so far scientifically from this monster storm?
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, my heart also goes out to those who lost friends, family, home, property. It's always horrible to see that kind of damage. However, I would say comfortably that if that same storm had hit, say, 10 years ago, the numbers you just recited would have been a lot higher. And that's because we have gotten so much better at forecasting the track, the intensity, and probably even more important, coordinating with FEMA, with Coast Guard, with Army Corps, with Red Cross. So what did we learn? We learned how important it is to make specific observations about the weather early on. Mm-hmm. So we fly P3 aircraft. We have hurricane hunters that we fly. The earlier we can fly them into a storm that's forming, the better that forecast will be. We've been able to demonstrate that those flights improve our track accuracy, our intensity forecast accuracy by anywhere from 10 to 20%. So we've learned that. We also launched a drone from one of our aircraft because we don't fly those aircraft too low. It's dangerous, but we can drop a drone, and that drone can fly all the way down to the surface of the ocean.
And what does that drone do? What does it collect?
It makes measurements of wind, temperature, pressure, rainfall rate, and that gives us the data that we can feed back in real time, that is to say, as it's happening, into the forecasters who can then run their models, their computer models, and update and improve their forecasts. So we've learned a number of things about how data collection and different means of data collection can improve the forecast.
So just so my audience understands, when they're watching their local weather meteorologist, they are using data that they and everyone gains from this particular work that NOAA does.
Absolutely. So we run the National Weather Service, which is paid for by tax dollars.
Right.
And oh, by the way, everything we do at NOAA translates to a cost to the American citizen of 6 cents per person per day. What an incredible deal. 6 cents.
Okay.
And with that, they get everything from managing our fisheries to mapping and charting our coasts to the weather forecast. So, yeah, the typical flow of information would be that that forecast that's developed from the kind of data that I just described and processed with our supercomputers goes to the National Hurricane Center there in Miami.
Right.
They then send that information out to all sources, broadcast meteorologists on TV, on the radio. We use our NOAA dissemination mechanisms like NOAA Weather Radio, as well as web-based products and services. And then there's a number of commercial entities that actually take some of those products and make other products out of those, specific for particular industries, for
example. So it would have been worse 10 years ago, even though some of these areas are more densely populated than they were 10 years ago.
So what I can tell you is that the forecast was... Basically, the forecast improves about one day every 10 years. That is to say, the 96-hour, four-day forecast that we provided was as good today as the 72-hour forecast was in the year 2012.
And let's not make a great jump over that. Let's say what that means. If you have an extra day to make a decision, that's a life-saving period of time.
Absolutely. And think about an agency like FEMA. So FEMA has to mobilize, get ready, have trucks, have water, have ice, have personnel pre-positioned. If we can give them 4 days of lead time with good skill and accuracy, that's worth an enormous amount to them.
We hear a lot, Dr. Rick Spinrad, about intensification of storms, heavier moisture in them, more rain. Does Ian fall into that category, and what does that progression or trajectory scientifically tell us?
Yeah, intensification, especially what we scientists would call rapid intensification, which basically means about one category, hurricane category, increase over a 24-hour period. That is one of the toughest parts of forecasting, and we actually did an extraordinarily good job with Ian this time. If you think about it, when that forecast first started coming out, we were looking carefully at what was going to happen with Ian as it went over Cuba and kept going north. And our forecasters were able to look at the temperature of the ocean and make a conclusion that Ian would rapidly intensify and also that it would de-intensify. And if you looked at what happened with Ian, it was Category 4 when it made landfall. By the time it crossed the peninsula of Florida, it was a tropical storm. It had downgraded. And then, here's the really important part, it actually re-intensified as it went back over the Atlantic and then hit the
Highly
Carolinas.
Unusual, if I remember my atmospheric science and experience with this, that's highly unusual.
Yeah, I mean, each of these
hurricanes can happen,
is unique.
And
yeah.
Theoretically, it always scientifically could happen, but for it to be basically a hurricane twice.
Yeah, after well, you have to have specific conditions with the water temperature
right.
and a track that's going to go over that and then make landfall again.
So when I watch and my viewers watch or hear, they will sometimes have their local meteorologist or the national cable meteorologist refer to the U.S. model and the European model. What's the difference?
So that's an interesting, it's become part of the sort of mythology or lore. There are many weather services around the world, including in the European countries that develop. The European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecast has their models. The fact of the matter is, we have many models ourselves. And what we do is we basically statistically look at the models and develop a blended or ensemble forecast, if you will, as do our friends in Europe. And so what you're really looking at is many different comparisons of many models from which we draw a conclusion. It's kind of like talking to a financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
If you're smart, you'll talk to several of them
right.
and
okay.
see what they all tend to agree on. And that's the same kind of concept.
Or falls into the second opinion category of
yeah,
medicine, maybe.
Extent. Yeah.
So when we think about hurricane landfalls, is that the way to think about the area of likely damage? Or because storms are intensifying and growing wider and larger, is that the best way to think about it?
So when you look at the forecast products that we put out something called the cone of uncertainty and a track line. And what we need people to understand is that that cone basically represents the area where we believe the hurricane is most likely to make its trajectory, make landfall. And that means the eye of the hurricane could fall anywhere within that particular cone of uncertainty, is likely to fall anywhere in that cone of uncertainty. But as you rightfully point out, the structure of these storms is such that they're tending to be larger, they're tending to move a bit slower, they're carrying an awful lot of precipitation. I mean, when I grew up, I remember hearing about so many inches of precipitation associated with a storm. We're talking feet.
Feet.
2 feet of rain fell. 5 feet of rain fell with Hurricane Harvey.
Right.
So it's a different kind of storm.
I'm going to stop you right there because we need to take a break for our radio audience. I'm Major Garrett. Segment two of The Takeout with Dr. Rick Spinrad when we come back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. So glad you are joining us. However you find this show, great radio stations around the country, Sirius XM, POTUS Channel 124, of course, on every great podcast platform and on CBS News streaming. I'm so glad you're hanging out with us. So Hurricane Ian is obviously a source of concern. Our hearts go out. We hope everyone works as hard and diligently as they can to rebuild in Florida. But look, this has been a tough weather year for this country. In Kentucky, just in March, more than 80 people died in five states, most of them in Kentucky and surrounding states, from tornadic activity, massive storms. In Nashville last summer, flash flooding killed more than 20. Wildfires related to droughts in my home state of California and the great American West. Weather, again, not politics, facts and science, is becoming something that weaves a pattern of devastation around this country, and we need to understand it, study it, and try to learn more about how this entire country can properly adapt to these realities. That's why I'm so glad Rick Spinrad is our guest. As I said before, he's the director of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. What does NOAA do in terms of monitoring patterns and noticeable changes in weather, not only in America, the Northern Hemisphere, and globally?
So I'll start by pointing out that we are the nation's archivist for weather data, weather information. The National Centers for Environmental Information is one of our units. So if you want to look back at the last century or the last year or the last month to understand what happened with weather, that's where you go, which is why we are the ones that have been able to put out some startling facts. You alluded to this, or you implied this increase in activity. Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting aspect of that. In the mid-1980s, we were seeing a billion-dollar disaster every 82 days on average. Now, it's every 18 days. So every 2.5 weeks, and that's adjusted for inflation too, every 2.5 weeks we're seeing a disaster of at least $1 billion damage. And of course, then you see something like Ian, where estimates are up over 50, maybe $75 billion of damage. So there is a pattern, and having the information to look back and see what are the trends, can we analyze these, can we make some predictions based on looking at
and can we make some adaptations in terms of infrastructure, where we live and how we live. All these things vector off what we are learning from and discerning from these patterns.
Yep.
These patterns are not political, correct?
That's right. Mother Nature
doesn't care.
Doesn't get driven by political agendas. And by the same token, there are things we can do by policy, by action. So just today, for example, the White House announced the adaptation plans of 20 different federal agencies, because we recognize that the great work, and I would argue the work that this administration has done, as evidenced by the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, which includes the largest climate and most significant climate legislation which we've ever seen. A lot of the emphasis has been on mitigating. How do we decarbonize? How do we get more renewables in? And what's really important is, as we do that, we need to do that, we have to adapt. Now, we have to deal with the fact that sea level is rising. We have to deal with the fact that, as you said, this last year we've seen something like 50,000 wildfires in our country, devastating some 7 million acres. How do we adapt to that? How do we become more resilient? What do we do with infrastructure? So one of the things I'm excited about is NOAA basically operates in a way as serving up these climate products for transportation, energy, agriculture, homeland security. Every sector of government depends on having that information in order to serve the public with the best products and services.
And to serve the public, you have to communicate. And we were talking during break, and I wanted to give you a moment to describe this, what you're learning about the importance of how you communicate, what you use in terms of colors, how your advisories translate into various languages. What are you learning about that?
So this has always been an issue, the social sciences, if you will.
Right.
How do we convey?
Hard science, social science. How do you translate and bridge the two?
What's the difference between a watch and a warning? How do I get a message out about severe weather in a place like New York City, where there may be 15 or 20 different languages into which that warning has to be translated? Probably, though, I would say that the problem that is most at the front door right now, and for which this administration is really pushing hard, is equitable co-development and delivery of products, which means it's not good enough to just say there's going to be a heat event in Chicago. We have to look at where are some of the most vulnerable communities, because a heat event, for example, extreme heat, it could be 20 degrees hotter in a redlined vulnerable district, an impoverished district. That means they're going to get hit hardest. So how do we figure out how to deliver that
to communicate to them?
To them, yes.
In a meaningful, timely way.
Tune the product to their specific needs. Mm-hmm. Not say, hey, the general area of Chicago is going to see a heat wave, but actually
say, how do you do that?
Well, part of it is with research, to understand how do you focus the predictions down to finer and finer detail. The other part is collaboration and doing things like making observations. So we have cooperative observation programs. Citizens can provide us information that we feed into our models. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it is just having the dialogue. So one of the things that I've taken very seriously is going around the country, talking with groups we might not have talked with before. I'm talking with faith-based organizations. You think about, well, why would the head of NOAA talk with church groups? Where do people go during a heat crisis? A lot of times, they go to church. Their house of prayer can be a cooling center.
Right.
So if we can tell...
A sanctuary for them in the most literal terms.
That's right. And so the faith-based community benefits from our being able to provide an accurate forecast of an extreme heat event, as well as anyone.
A silly question. Do you do any of this via text or?
We do it through all kinds of communication
already.
Mechanisms. Yeah, we do. We can do better. And there are some automated approaches. Obviously, NOAA Weather Radio was a tool that we developed many, many years ago. But we're trying to use as many different tools as we can, social media tools.
Right.
We're not doing it as well as we could, in my opinion, but we can do some more.
So Oceanic is right there, the second word in the name of your agency. Tell my audience scientifically what's happening with ocean temperatures and why that should matter.
90% of the heat that's being produced by global warming, a component of climate change, ends up in the oceans. So the oceans are heating faster than most of the rest of the globe and are holding most of that heat. So we started this conversation talking about Hurricane Ian. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes, typhoons, are powered in a large part by the heat of the ocean. So the more heat that's stored in the ocean, the more we can expect these storms to have more power, more water. Look at Typhoon Merbok, for example. This was a storm that started as a classic tropical storm and now ended up hitting the Bering Sea. That storm had a lot of power, and part of that is attributable to the amount of energy, the amount of heat that's stored in the ocean.
And it seems with this warmer ocean, the intensification is faster and over a shorter distance. I mean, it's not all that far from Cuba to the Tampa, Fort Myers area of Florida. I mean, sometimes hurricanes travel great distances around open expanses of water, and that's what generates this intensification. That wasn't all that far or that fast, and yet it happened.
It did, and I would say that that in itself would not necessarily be attributable to the excess heat in the ocean. We've always seen intensification. I mean,
okay.
Going back to Katrina, for example.
Right.
Katrina intensified
pretty rapidly.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Right. But I will tell you it was largely a consequence of the heat in the ocean. And as we get more of that, we're going to see more of that kind of intensification. But I got to say, there are so many other factors associated with climate change impacting the ocean, like acidification, that for an agency that, as you say, has oceanic in its name, the issues of climate change are really charging us with a lot of requirements for new products and services, especially in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. So we're at Café du Parc, which is part of the Willard Hotel right near right near the White House, of course, in downtown Washington, D.C. Dr. Rick Spinrad is our guest. He is the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So I'm going to set this question up, and you're going to answer it on the other side of the break, because I've got 15 seconds to do it. But what I want you to tell my audience on the other side of this break is, if they have any doubts about climate change, why they should maybe look a second or third time. I'm going to give you a chance to answer that on the other side of this break. I'm Major Garrett, segment 3 of The Takeout, in just 1 second.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. You heard my teaser question right before we went to break, Dr. Rick Spinrad of NOAA. So, again, I'm not trying to get into the politics. I'm just trying to get into the science of it. We say, oh, we've always had bad weather. There was a freeze thing. I hear this all the time. Time magazine had a cover back in the 70s about the coming ice age. It never happened. We don't know what we think we know. It's all more mysterious and harder to plumb the depths of than the current conversation suggests. That's one articulated bit of skepticism I've heard about climate change or global warming. What would you say to someone who's open-minded but skeptical net about what they hear about climate change or global warming?
I'd come at that question from two perspectives. One is, as someone who was trained in physics in my early career, there's a simple physical explanation. We're putting the greenhouse effect means we're putting more energy, more heat into the system, and it's got to manifest somehow. And we've been talking about the various ways. The other way I'd come at it is I'd say take a look, especially using perspectives from, say, traditional communities. We call it indigenous knowledge sometimes. I spent a few weeks in Alaska this year, this past summer, and had the opportunity to talk to fishing communities, coastal communities, inland communities, and in every case, they're seeing things like their communities are being forced to do what we call a managed retreat. They're having to move their communities because of coastal erosion. The elders will tell you this is not something they've ever seen before.
We're not part of their oral history or anything like
absolutely
that, passed
not
down generation by generation by
that's
generation.
Right. You look at what's happening with fisheries in places like Alaska. How much of the loss of salmon in the Yukon and the Kuskokwim River is a consequence of the warm waters of the North Pacific affecting mm-hmm. the salmon. You look at how roads in Fairbanks are buckling because they're getting rainstorms in late December. These are all, and then the wildfires in the state. And you look elsewhere. It's not just Alaska, although I would say we're seeing indications very strongly in Alaska. I talked to a congressman, a Republican congressman from a very red district in a very red state recently, who told me, hey, I'm a fifth-generation farmer. I can't farm the way my grandfather did. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually encouraged, Garrett, that the
I've been called so much worse than Garrett. That's totally good.
I'm encouraged by the fact that we're no longer having the discussion of attribution. Mm-hmm. You know, is this storm climate change? Whose fault is this? But what we're talking about is what do we do about it?
What
how
do
I get the information? So I think there's a few answers, ways to answer your question. It really boils down to what people are seeing in their daily lives. If I can, one other point.
Of course, of course.
We're seeing it already in what we pay. So think about what happened in Florida. We all pay for insurance, mm-hmm. and what we pay is part of what has to be paid out for the damages being caused by the severe storms, such as Hurricane Ian. We're paying for it in the impacts on how goods are transported. So we're seeing it either directly or indirectly.
Right, and when you talk about those instances of billion-dollar damage events, as you said, inflation-adjusted, one every 82 days, now one every 18 days, when you start covering Congress at any time in your career, and I started in 1990, one of the first things you learn that you have to cover in the appropriations, meaning spending cycle, are supplementals, which means additional allocations of federal dollars because something unexpected has happened. Oftentimes, they're driven by natural disasters, these supplementals. We have more of them now, and they're of larger price tags than they've ever been before. That's just a fact. You can look it up. So as a direct taxpayer interest, this matters. We are paying for recovery efforts, whether it's wildfires, tornadoes, hurricanes, and the like. True?
Yeah, we are. And I think it's encouraging that a lot of the smart policymakers and strategists out there are already trying to build in the sort of cost avoidance aspects of this. So you look at what the Department of Defense is doing with respect to their bases and mm-hmm. their facilities, and they're already saying, let's take these long-term projections of what climate change is going to do in terms of things like sea level rise and see if we can accommodate that in the bases. So we are already seeing a lot of that resilience.
And back to oceans. As just a practical scientific fact, oceans are not warming and becoming more acidic on their own.
Yeah, I mean,
that's happening, and it has to be happening for some reason. Oceans aren't doing it to themselves, as if they anthropomorphically could, but I'm just saying there's an external factor that is leading to measurable and measured changes in oceans. Those are all incontrovertible facts.
Yeah, the data speak for themselves. You know, the old saying, you can have your own opinion, you can't have your own data. That's and the data show clearly that as you add carbon dioxide mm-hmm. to seawater, you're going to see acidification. You're going to see changes.
So there's something that's on your website that I found very interesting, and I want to let you run free with it, because people will hear in their local communities, their meteorologists say, this summer is hotter than normal or than the normals of the last 10 or 15 years. And on your website, you have, what are climate normals? Mm-hmm. What are they?
So this is a really fascinating question. I mean, the question really is, what are modes, right? I mean, we can talk about climate normals as the average over the last several years, but let me give you an analogy, all right? The analogy is that you're driving down a highway and you're crossing from one state to the next, and they have different speed limits. In the first state, everybody is going, usually, within about 5 miles an hour of the speed
right.
limit.
Depending on where you are. Yeah.
Right. And then you cross the state line, and the speed limit goes up by, say, 15 miles per hour. People are still all within about 5 miles an hour of each other,
right.
but they're at a different modality, a different level. The same thing can be applied to climate. We're going into a different sort of modality where sea surface temperatures, air temperatures, patterns of storms are going to be different. But what does that modality look like? And that's where we have some control, which is why the Paris Agreement, everything we are trying to do to reduce our emissions and our partners overseas are trying to do the same thing, ultimately plays into us defining our future.
As someone who grew up in the western part of the United States, San Diego, not so much when I was young, but later you would hear about La Nina and El Nino.
Yeah.
How do they play into this? And should they be thought of as complementary to the scientific evidence or outside of it? What effect do they have and how should we think about them?
Yeah, I love that question because when I was a young scientist, I was taught that El Nino happens every 7 years, like clockwork, and that it was limited in its impact to just the Pacific Ocean. Obviously, we know El Nino, La Nina, and I would add to that, Major, a whole series of other similar events in the North Atlantic and the Arctic. There are oscillation events that patterns go up and down, like El Nino, La Nina. How they are influenced by or are influencing climate is a real subject of extensive scientific research. And a lot of that lies in getting the data that we need, which is not easy to do in the ocean. But there is a connection. We know that. How predictable it is a real challenge for the research community right now.
And in that answer is something else I want to kind of unspool, which is this data and the science behind it talks about trends and probabilities. It doesn't make absolute predictions because hard science is always subject to things it doesn't know as much as about what it does know. You're the scientist at the table, not me. Run with that.
Yeah, this gets into the social sciences and behavioral sciences piece. So you find a broadcast meteorologist, your TV weatherman or weather person, and ask them if what they're providing is a probabilistic forecast or a deterministic forecast. And the good ones will tell you, I want a probabilistic forecast, but I won't issue a probabilistic forecast. So they want the data. They want the statistics that say, yeah, there's an 80% chance it's going to rain here in Washington tomorrow. They're going to get on TV and they're going to say, expect rain tomorrow. And so we have to learn how to convey probabilistic information in a way that actually allows people to make decisions. I can't tell you what probability you can tolerate to make your decision. I can give you the best information that I've got about what I think the forecast is going to look like. And quite honestly, this is at the heart of what we're trying to do in NOAA. We have a concept called Climate Ready Nation. And the idea is that by 2030, every decision maker, what's a decision maker? An emergency manager, a city planner, a faith-based community.
A mayor, a governor, a
pastor,
builder. Right.
Right. What
general
do they
contractor,
need
right.
to be climate ready? They need the best products that allow them to make the decision that they need to make for their business or their practice or their community or themselves. And so for us, we call that a climate ready nation. And it gets to your question about making different products available for different users.
Climate readiness, whether you know it or not, it's a thing. I'm Major Garrett. Stay tuned for segment four of The Takeout in just 1 second.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, Los Angeles. Are you looking for unique 4th of July plans for you and your friends or family? LA's greatest rivalry returns to Rose Bowl Stadium for a July 4th edition of the El Tráfico soccer matchup as the LA Galaxy return to their original home to defend their turf against LAFC. Last year, a record crowd of over 82,000 fans were on hand to witness the Galaxy victory. That's July 4th at Rose Bowl Stadium. Guaranteed fireworks both on and off the field and a celebration for all of LA. LA Galaxy versus LAFC, the Rose Bowl edition. Tickets at lagalaxy.com/tickets.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout
with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Café du Parc is our special host restaurant, part of the Willard Hotel. Happy to be here. All things weather, all things climate, and the readiness therein. Rick Spinrad of NOAA is our special guest. I want to ask you about something that I just read via my excellent co-producer on this show, Jamie Benson. Something in Mother Jones about 5G and weather forecasting. I had no clue whatsoever until about 3 hours ago they were even remotely related. But this article talks about spectrum range radio wavelengths and says as follows. The problem is the radio wave frequency used by wireless cellular networks is similar to the ones used to monitor atmospheric conditions. The 24 gigahertz band is increasingly being used for telecommunications, notably for 5G cellular networks. The nearby 23.8 gigahertz band is reserved for scientific purposes, including weather satellites. As these two spectrum bands come under greater use, they can interfere, making the dissemination of weather and climate information slower and less accurate. True?
So, just from, again, from a physics standpoint, mm-hmm. Major, when you look at this, those facts are right, that communications depend on a certain spectrum allocation, frequency allocation, and the physics of measuring things in the atmosphere, specifically humidity, how much water is in the atmosphere, depend on using particular bandwidths of the electromagnetic spectrum. So it is true in the sense that there are areas where there can be crosstalk, dare I say, maybe interference. However, the good news is that, and trust me, as somebody who relies on my cell phone
yes.
and loves that we've gone from 3G to 4G to 5G to whatever may come next, I really want to see commerce and our whole societal benefits that depend on that spectrum allocation mm-hmm. Able to do all that they can. By the same token, we don't want to degrade our capability to collect weather information, and that's really where the forecast part comes, because as I mentioned mm-hmm. to you earlier, the forecast depends on getting data and making observations.
Right.
And if that gets compromised, our forecasts get worse. So we have to be attentive to that. Now, what I believe is at the heart of this is good people trying to find creative technological solutions. And there are some very sophisticated techniques in communications, in sensing, in how to use the spectrum mm-hmm. that may allow us to solve both problems at the same time.
So it's a real thing.
It is.
And smart people are trying to resolve it.
Yes.
In government and in the private sector.
Yes.
And you believe scientifically it is resolvable.
I think we can get to a certain point scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we can solve the whole problem with some clever scientific solution. There will have to be policy decisions made.
Mm-hmm.
And that's trade-offs. That's true.
And winners and losers will be involved in that.
Yeah, to some extent, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But for those who might be thinking, or as they're working out or driving or doing the dishes, lots of people do lots of things as they listen to this great show. Holy cow, does 5G mean the end of my accurate weather forecasting? You're saying no.
Not as we have it right now. I would say what we're trying to do is increase and improve our weather forecasts all the time. Who's not in favor of improved weather forecasts?
I certainly am. I'm going to vote for that. All right. When people in my audience and Americans in their daily lives hear about glaciers shrinking or the ice sheets in Antarctica shrinking, what should they deduce or conclude from that?
First of all, that's real.
Okay.
This is not some
photographic evidence is absolute.
Photographic evidence. Satellites are measuring these using a variety of techniques. Second of all, it's impactful that with every bit of loss of land-based ice, you're going to see some component of sea level rise. And it's not just sea level rise. It also has impacts because that's generally fresher water, which means it's going to affect the circulation. And third of all, we're getting better and better at predicting what those consequences will be. So those are all facts. They're scientifically founded facts. But it is something people should be aware of.
Mm-hmm. And does it change? Like I've read and we've seen stories about parts of the permafrost in Russia melting and thawing and things being released into the atmosphere that they hasn't been released. Methane is one of the component parts of that. Is that part of this scientific equation as well?
Yeah, that's a different part of the
different
equation.
Different part, I'm sorry, yeah.
So it's a consequence of the global warming that we alluded to earlier, and the consequence of that is the permafrost can soften, can melt, can start to thaw, and you can see release of methane, and we are starting to see some of that in some parts of the world. Mm-hmm. But again, there's a lot of good research going on right now. In fact, I was at the permafrost tunnel in Fairbanks, Alaska, just a month ago, seeing the work that's being done in that area.
How's the restaurant there, by the way?
It's all frozen food.
He was ready. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? I thought I was going to drop one, and he was ready. Another place I visited, too, I know very well. I lived in Las Vegas for 2 years, grew up in San Diego, Lake Mead. A gorgeous place, an amazing place. Hoover Dam is a engineering marvel. I was just there. That lake is unrecognizable to me to the lake I observed in the mid-1980s. Positively unrecognizable. What does that tell us?
Well, drought, the insidious problems associated with drought. We were talking earlier about sea level rise. We were talking about severe storms. The other risks, flood, drought, heat health, coastal erosion, are all being impacted right now. And so we're going to see continued severe patterns of severe drought. This last year we had a seasonal forecast which held up that said we were going to see increasing drought in that part of the country. We have produced something we call the National Integrated Drought Information System, working with our colleagues at USGS and USDA and other parts of the government that give people the best information on a seasonal basis. So we put out an update every month of what the drought is going to look like. But we can expect to see patterns like that continuing as a result of the changes.
I want to remind my audience that during lockdown, when there was very little of this, I mean, no, actually there was none of this, being out doing the show live and in restaurants, I produced another podcast called The Debrief. And if you go back to the archives of that, 2 weeks in a row we did the environment, climate change. Gina McCarthy, then the senior White House advisor to the president on climate issues, was one of our many, many expert voices. And she said, you know, I don't hawk the way I used to, the doom and gloom. I talk optimistically about the things that can be different. And she said, one thing that happens for all of us in this space is that we get dreary and gloomy, or we sound dreary and gloomy, and the public says, well, there's nothing I can do. It's all hopeless. What the hell? Never mind. In the minute we have left, give me your version of Gina McCarthy on that.
Well, first of all, I miss her already since she's left government, but I will tell you that I have been a climate optimist throughout my time at NOAA, and that's reflected in what in this climate ready nation concept, because there's two words in our mission statement for climate ready nation. One is prosper and the other is benefit. You don't tend to hear that a lot in the rhetoric associated with climate change. I believe if we do what we need to do in terms of research, develop the products, the forecasts and the projections, we will be in a better place with respect to understanding how to adapt to climate change. So I am a climate optimist.
We don't have to assume there's nothing we can do.
There is plenty we can do if we get the information that we need.
Dr. Rick Spinrad of NOAA, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. For those of us in our radio audience, we need to bid you farewell, but those on CBS News streaming and our beloved podcast, stay tuned for the Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett, and we will see you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett, Cafe du Parc, our host restaurant. Been here before, always a great time. Part of the Willard Hotel, right near the White House, downtown Washington, D.C. Dr. Rick Spinrad is our special guest, administrator of NOAA, scientist, and a familiar relationship with CBS News. Explain that for me, will you please?
Oh, thanks, Major. Yeah. My dad, who passed away about 35 years ago, was a VP for public relations with CBS, and he was a journalist and worked in a number of offices there, and actually retired from CBS, I want to say, in about 1979 or so, after a long career with the company.
Yeah, just for those of you already hatching media, government, conspiracy, nebulae, and webs, I didn't go to college until 1980, so there's no connection whatsoever. I grew up in New York.
I did, yeah, okay. Right in the city.
We have three questions we ask every guest who sits at the takeout table or joins us via Zoom, as so many did during lockdown. Take these in whichever order you prefer. They're the fun and games part of this program. But I always love the answers, and our audience does too. So, most influential book in your life and why? All-time favorite movie? And if you're taking a long flight or on a long drive and you're really going to enjoy some music, I mean really going to enjoy some music, what kind of music, artist, or genre are you most likely to listen to?
The Sting.
Movie.
Is the movie.
And as said by both Paul Newman and Robert Redford, a near-perfect script.
It's wonderful.
It's a great movie and a great demonstration of putting a movie and a story together on a script for movie presentation. It really is great.
And great plot, too.
Great plot.
So, depends on the flight, mm-hmm. where I'm going.
Right.
And whether I'm going to have to work when I get there or I can hit the sack. But usually, Eric Clapton's on the playlist. All the time. Grateful Dead.
Grateful Dead mentioned with some frequency. I think that's the first Eric Clapton reference. That surprises me because Eric Clapton is a monumentally important rock and roll musician and guitarist. Yeah.
And Bonnie Raitt. I've been in love with Bonnie Raitt since I was a kid. So.
Yep. Excellent.
And book's an interesting one because part of my answer, there are several. I know that's not fair to do
no,
that.
No, go ahead. Take as many as you want.
The River Why is a very interesting book, and also my dad's books. He did a number of books, nonfiction, mostly what you would probably find on the web these days in terms of an almanac of events and people, mm-hmm. and it influenced a lot of my thinking with respect to what the values are mm-hmm. for different people in different positions.
So when my children were young, they're all out of college now and striking out on their own, I'm happy to say. And we would go grocery shopping together. Oftentimes that within our family unit fell to me. They would implore me to get the Farmer's Almanac at checkout because they love to look at the weather forecast. And yeah. they love to see how accurate they would be so far out.
Yeah.
What does the NOAA administrator think of the Farmer's Almanac weather forecast?
It is one source of information. There are many like that. And I think I would consider it as
part... That's like saying the Edsel is a former automobile of note. I mean, come on.
Let's put it this way. I don't rely on the Farmer's Almanac for my personal planning.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find it entertaining reading.
They found it entertaining reading. And sometimes, generally, I guess within a general statistical pattern, they would say, well, that's... like. They'll say it'll be snowier this winter than last winter.
Yeah.
And generalizations like that, they always found both entertaining and sometimes helpful.
Yeah, and I guess you could argue that it does teach people some of the fundamental aspects of the variability of weather,
mm-hmm.
that this summer is not going to be like last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the almanac would give you a correlation in there. It would say that the correlations were kind of specious. One might argue
sure.
that there are more chickens being hatched this spring, so therefore the summer is going to be hot. But it does give a sense that there are many things that affect the weather. I mean, I would imagine that there are probably a lot of professional meteorologists out there whose first engagement with right. weather was reading the Farmer's Almanac.
Right, right. So it's out there. It's fun. It's
does no harm.
Harmless and amusing for... women and children and men alike, I guess we would say. Rick Spinrad, it's been great to talk to you. Great to meet you. Thanks for this conversation. Thanks for helping my audience have as apolitical a conversation about a topic as important and persistent and in times costly and deadly in our lives as weather changes.
Absolutely. Thank you, Major, for your attention to this.
Thanks
really
so much. We'll
it.
See you next week, ladies and gentlemen. This is your Takeout Outtake Especial. Always a pleasure. We'll see you next week.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.